This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb. You've probably been reading in the news a lot about 3D printing, which is a manufacturing process that's gaining increasing favor in all sorts of industries. We're talking today to Jim Bertel and Joel Smith of a company called Stratasys Direct Manufacturing of Eden Prairie, Minnesota. They have just qualified for the first time a part for a satellite, qualified and built, I should say, for a weather satellite, series of weather satellites for NASA that are built using what we sometimes call 3D manufacturing, but it's better called additive manufacturing. And these parts, for the first time, will be on the exterior of a spacecraft, the satellites. And we're going to find a little bit about how this process works. So, Jim and Joel, first of all, tell us how Stratasys got involved with this and how the job kind of proceeded.
Thanks. Joel, why don't you start off on that? This was really your account starting off.
Yeah, so this all started with the Cosmic One program back in 2006, and then it went into what they're calling Cosmic Two now. And Cosmic 2 is a program that they're looking to launch in 2016-2018 as far as satellites. The NASA approached then RedEye, now Stratasys Direct Manufacturing, about looking at alternate ways to manufacture parts to hit their time schedule and budget constraints for the Cosmic 2. So we started talking to them about material options and design and that kind of thing. So initially, the NASA approached us looking for basically a solution to their delivery and budget constraints for the Cosmic 2 program.
And we should explain here real quick what the actual part is. It's an antenna mount. Can you explain for the listeners what that is exactly?
Yeah, so the antenna mount is basically an array of cones that are mounted to a aluminum honeycomb panel, and it's basically an antenna that has wiring that's attached to the panel, and it's basically receiving and transmitting information about weather and atmospheric conditions.
And it made sense for NASA to go with an additive manufacturing process here because it was less expensive and it met the time frame and was just altogether more efficient. Tell us how this process works with regard to this part, because if looking at a picture of it, it's a pretty complex part.
Yeah, with the additive manufacturing process, we were able to actually build a part in one piece versus having multiple assemblies or multiple parts assembled as one assembly. That's one of the benefits of additive manufacturing. So the part is that we made for NASA was actually built out of Ultim 9085, which is a flight-certed material. It's currently a flight-certed material and is used in the aerospace and defense industry. It has FST certs, vertical burn certs. So it's a material that's known in the aerospace industry. It's a very durable material, and it has really good properties. It meets a lot of the properties for the reception and that kind of thing that they were looking for with antennas. So that was kind of went through that selection process of saying, you know, what material makes sense, and come to a down select for the Ultim 9085. And with that material and with this printing process, we were able to combine the parts and build this antenna array as one piece. The other thing that was valuable in this project as we were moving through the qualification phase is having the ability to change the design or modify the design as testing was done and where we see engineering changes that needed to be made. The additive manufacturing process allows you to do that rather quickly and then get the part back to the test stand and validate the changes. So that was another benefit with this additive manufacturing process that NASA chose to use.
What is the...
Hey, Joe, if I...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'll just add real quick to that. The other thing that we did in the process is we're able to design it for additive manufacturing. And in doing that, we're able to design, for example, at a 45-degree angle where we don't need support structures to in the building process, which cuts down time and cuts down material. So the end product comes out just as you want it, and you eliminate some scrap and time in the process as well. So you can go through those design iterations and get to the part that you want, and especially for this complex design, which you really can't do in the traditional way of making these. And traditionally, these were made through a machining process.
And what is that material that you described? Is that a composite material? Is it more metallic or more or plastic? What exactly is it?
The traditional material before?
The material you used for this project.
It's a Ultim 985 plastic material, also used in injection molding, but as Joel mentioned, certified material for aerospace applications.
So as I imagine this thing being built, is it, from what I've read about additive manufacturing, it's built in a series of passes and just built up. And how long does that process take?
Yeah, so the way additive manufacturing works and FDM or fused deposition modeling, it's basically built layer by layer. And so think of it on a real basic level as a hot glue gun. Program to go across and put plastic only where you want it. And you build that up layer by layer. And in this case, with this design, each build took about 58 hours to build. And a little bit of post-processing, but very, very little in after it comes off the machine.
And where does this process go from here? That's kind of the $64,000 question. Additive manufacturing is seen to have huge potential in terms of what it can do and sophistication of parts and also economics. As far as aerospace is concerned, what kind of things should we start to see?
So I'll answer, and then I think Joel, because he's aerospace specific, can probably add to it. You know, we're seeing a lot of our aerospace customers come to us with parts they're already making today, similar to this, where they're machining the parts today or they're injection molding them. They might be a low-volume production, or certainly can be a new design where they don't want to spend the money on tooling, and it's low-volume, so they can choose our technology because the part can be made much faster, and the time savings can be measured in months, certainly weeks, but in most cases, months, and savings in the design process. And we're seeing applications in aerospace for all sorts of things on, you know, clips and brackets and vents and ducting applications in aerospace in particular, but certainly other industries as well. But Joel, maybe you can add to that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The other thing that's really huge is with aerospace, and especially in the design and development phase, a lot of times a manufacturer will have a limited space in which to put a component or put their part in. So with additive manufacturing, if you're building, just take for instance, one of the tight areas is avionics, communication bays or avionics bins. Putting an avionics rack in a small location with additive manufacturing, you actually can design and build a part to do functionality checks really quick to validate your design if you're going through a traditional tooling application. And also it gives you the flexibility if the material if Ultim material meets the properties, strength, characteristics that you're looking for end use, then of course you can go straight from prototyping into low-rate initial production into manufacturing. The other thing that's really large I think is a plus for aerospace defense, most of the manufacturers, subcontractors are basically doing make-to-order parts. And so the volumes are not there that you see with an automotive industry. With additive manufacturing, you're not penalized like you are in some of the traditional manufacturers with your cost breaks and your high-volume parts. This will allow you to produce as many as you want without being penalized. So the other thing it allows you to do is to control your inventory. For manufacturing, you basically can do a just-in-time inventory and set that schedule up so you're printing parts, building parts as you need them and having them shipped in. The other thing for aerospace and defense is the ability to sustain a program for the life of a program. If you identify parts that can be built and added in manufacturing, this will allow you the flexibility to decrease your inventory that you have to carry on hand, because now you have a really good way to manufacture a part and not have to worry about storing tools, tool life and that kind of thing. And you also are decreasing your cost by not carrying the larger volumes of inventory that you normally would have to support an airframe.
As this process improves, will additive manufacturing reach the point where it can produce parts that have to carry high loads?
That's definitely where where the industry is wanting this technology to go. Right now, we're seeing parts that are being evaluated and looked at and built for non-flight critical parts is a no-brainer when it comes to the material meeting of specs. So if you can just say, for instance, your interior parts, a lot of your non load-bearing parts, interior cosmetic parts, it makes sense because you're doing a lot of low-volume production. Where we want to go exactly is to where you're getting into your load-bearing, your more critical, not necessarily a flight-critical or mission-essential part, but your more load-bearing parts. And you're looking at the other thing that you can do with additive manufacturing is you can look at it decreasing your part count. So you can, instead of having a duct work that has to have brackets, you can build all that into the part. You can have the hardware built into the part. So when you get it, it's one piece, one assembly. So you're taking weight out, you're taking time out of the build, and then you're also reaping the benefit of not having to store large volumes of inventory to manage, a fleet or whatever, or a production run. So it's definitely where we want to go. They are looking at new materials, always trying to stretch and put new materials, more robust materials on the market that still meet the flames, smoke, and toxicity requirements and get an FAA-approved material.
I'd add to that just briefly that we also, not only for plastics, as Joel mentioned, as materials come out, but we also actually have a fairly large metal 3D printing additive manufacturing capability within Stratasys Direct Manufacturing. And so to meet some of those load requirements you're referencing, we can and will be able to do that more and more in the future, even with metal as well.
Okay, well, I'm adding your names to my contact list. I'm going to check back with you in 2 or 3 years and see where you are on this project. It sounds, this technology is really moving rapidly, and it sounds very interesting. So thanks very much for talking to us, guys, and we will look forward to where it goes. This has been Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb. We've been talking to Jim Bertel and Joel Smith of Stratasys Direct Manufacturing. Thanks for listening.